Oh, completely dark. Find out how much of a coward I am.
Ladies and gentlemen, and Rish, welcome to the podcast that dares not speak its name. Here is your host, the very scared and cowardly and underendowed,
hey,
Rish Outfield.
Hey guys, I only have 30 minutes before the hard drive on this thing is completely full. And so I will try and keep it all brief. But this, I have decided, will be the Halloween episode of the podcast that dares not speak its name. And once again, if you listen, I am outside. It's a beautiful night. It's late at night. I worked a long time and I was tired when I got out of work. And so I thought, you know what? I deserve to go get some Dr. Pepper. And I drank some Dr. Pepper, and now the caffeine is keeping me awake, and hopefully it will keep me talking well into the night. Oh, wait, not well into the night. I've only got a half hour to get this done. See, I want to preface this story with the usual happy horse crap that I usually preface my stories with of, this isn't a very good story, and I'm not a very good writer, and I'm talentless, and yet somehow I expect you to listen to me. All of that is nonsense, isn't it? I gotta have some kind of ego to want to record my stories and want to share them with strangers or just myself. But, yeah, I'm tempted to say you're in for a treat. I don't know. You can decide in a few minutes, but I'm going to present to you the second oldest Rish Outfield story I've presented on my podcasts, The Cemetery Tale. Now, this was written in the year 2000. In the year 2000. Men will no longer hunt baby seals for their pelts, but for revenge. In the year 2000. I'm sorry, I just loved that Conan O'Brien thing years and years ago, before this episode was even written. This story. Anyhow, yes, the year, this was written in 2000, and now it's 2015, and whenever you're listening to this, it's even farther away from that. I just recorded it tonight. I was still awake, so I came outside to do the episode, and I'm presenting it to you, and then afterward, we'll talk about the origins of this story, and we'll talk about my feelings on this story, and why I chose it to be the Halloween episode. The other day I unearthed this story because I was thinking I need to put out a couple of collections of my audio on Audible. And I've been told time and time again that if they're short, nobody's going to want to spend an Audible credit on them, you know, if it's an hour or less or whatever. And so I thought, well, if I put together 10 stories and it was a 4-hour, 5-hour recording, then maybe people would feel like, hey, that's worth spending a credit on. So I just looked at like lists of stories that I have written. I used to be assiduous at keeping track of everything I had written, whether I finished it or not, even the poems, even the love poems that I would write for girls and boys. And around, I don't know, 2006 or so, I stopped keeping track of that. And it's a shame because it would be great to just have a document, like some kind of digital, gosh, what do they call those things? Not a spreadsheet. Is it a database? Is that what the word is I'm looking for? That just had everything that I've written and I could look at it and say, oh, this one, this would be good. Oh, this would be good. I'm going to record this. I'm going to do this on the Rish Outcast, etc. But I was, yeah, just looking through my files and I saw this one. And I thought, oh, this would be fun to record. And I thought it would be neat if Big and I recorded it. And he was two of the characters and I was two of the characters. And it didn't happen. Big and I don't get together nearly as often as we used to. I work every single Monday night, which is what tonight is. And Monday night is traditionally when we would get together to record. And so it's just been difficult. Anyway, I've gone on and on, haven't I?
I hope you don't mind. I hope you're happy to hear me
ramble. But enjoy, if possible, The Cemetery Tale.
The Cemetery Tale. I heard your dick called the police on your hand, Stuart said to me casually. We had been walking along the side of the road for about 20 minutes now, breaking bottles. So far, my cousin had 9, and I had 4. Huh? I said. I hadn't really been paying attention. Dick who? He laughed at my dim-wittedness. He often did that. After all, I was just a small-town yokel, and he was from the self-proclaimed greatest state on the planet. Your dick. He paused to see if I'd react. When I didn't, he went on. Know what the charge was? I think the thick California air was getting to me.
No.
Beats me, he said, then burst into laughter. I looked at him skeptically. Had he just called me a dick?
Don't you get it? He chuckled. Or you can say that he said you were a jerk.
He smiled big, and I smiled back, but just because his smiles were that way.
I still don't get it.
Stuart was my best cousin. He was 10 months older than me, knew everything there was to know about the things that most fascinated me. He lived in exotic California and had French-kissed a girl before. I really looked up to Stuart, for those reasons and more. One of those reasons was that he loved to get into trouble. He believed that rules were made for breaking, and whenever we got together, he'd have a mischievous agenda prepared for us and a backup plan in case that fell through. We'd play pranks on our younger siblings. We'd sneak out of the house and run wild through the streets. We'd play pranks on our parents. We'd watch stuff that was strictly forbidden. We'd play pranks on neighbors and strangers. We'd lie, we'd swear, we'd steal. And throughout it all, we'd laugh. And what made our escapades even better was that we almost never got caught. Stuart was that talented at what he called stirring it up. We'd write letters back and forth, and he'd always fit that phrase in. When you come down this summer, we'll stir it up. Or, don't forget to stir it up with your girlfriend. Or, well, I gotta go. I've got some stirring to do. Well, my family trip to California in the summer of 1988 was no different. Stuart was 15, and I was 14, and I'd like to think that he valued our stirring time as much as I did. Stuart was currently seeing a girl by the name of Brandy. In letters and phone calls, he had told me all about her. I mean, all about her. And I was looking forward to getting some instruction on how to hook a girl for myself, as if he knew a magic word that would change everything.
No problem, Stuart had said. In fact, Brandy's got this friend, Kathy, that we could hook you up with.
I had put up a pitiful argument, but the whole time I was excited. I couldn't stop thinking of how David Lee Roth said he wished they all could be California girls. I pictured in my mind what this Kathy would look like and how it would be to finally get to kiss a girl. Let me be honest. I pictured a lot in my mind. The days had been slow leading up to our trip to Stuart's place in Juniper, California, a town in the mountains near Palm Springs. The drive from Utah across the desert had been even longer, but when I got there, the time flew by.
Wow, Stuart said when he saw me. You look terrible. Did you get uglier since the last time you were here?
Maybe, I said. You look the same as always, I'm sorry to say.
Well, you can't improve on perfection, he said through a grin, though I had meant it as an insult, and he knew it.
My mom was already chatting with Stuart's, and my sisters were checking out their cousin's room. So there we were.
What did you bring me? Stuart asked.
Just what you deserve. Jack squat.
Really? You forgot the firecrackers?
Oh, I said. No, I brought them. They're in my suitcase.
I'm glad you remembered, he said. My neighbor's cat just had kittens.
This was going to be the best trip ever. After we had run out of illegal fireworks, the two of us went for a walk, breaking bottles by the side of the road. Neither of us had driver's licenses, and though Stuart regaled me with tales of how his dad let him drive whenever he wanted, the reality of things dictated that we walk if we wanted to go somewhere. I'm being complicated. I just wanted to get back to where we started. I saw a brown bottle ahead and ran to smash it. "Coors Light," I proclaimed.
"Already broken. Doesn't count," Stuart said,
but I finished breaking it anyway. "So," I said to Stuart, not even bothering to pretend this hadn't been on my mind. "When do I get to meet your girlfriend?"
"She works tonight," he said, "at the laundromat her folks own. She'll come over tomorrow, though."
"And her friend?"
"Her friend? You mean Kathy? Oh, hey, I hate to tell you this, but Kathy was in a car accident. She's dead, man."
The two of us went too far back for me to fall for that line. "I'm sorry to hear that, you butthole." He flashed me that prize-winning grin.
"Nah, she'll be over tomorrow, too. Bet you can't wait."
I made a quick snorting sound. "Hey, it's no big deal, man."
"Is that why you're walking funny?"
"Shut up." We started up for the rest of the day and into the night, watching some awful summer camp horror movie he'd tricked his mom into renting, and tormenting our sleeping sisters with shaving cream. We fell asleep laughing, as we always did. Stuart could be crude, and I could be too when I was with him, but he was good company. I didn't have to pretend I was anybody other than me. That was refreshing, and I think he felt the same about me. The next day came, and after we had dragged ourselves out of bed, ate lunch, and played Metroid on the Nintendo for way too long, it was time for the girls to come over. Pastime, really. Our folks had gone sightseeing, foolishly leaving us alone, but since they were due back by 8 at night, they supposed we couldn't do too much damage. At 8:21, the doorbell rang. I looked at Stuart. He raised his brows in a Ferris Bueller imitation I could never have duplicated. And suddenly, my heart rate increased like a pervert in a confessional.
"They're here," he said,
this time producing a really bad Heather O'Rourke imitation. We practically raced through the living room, our video game forgotten, and reached the door in an excited huff. Stuart opened the door. Brandy was skinny, short, well-dressed, with long, curly red hair. She wasn't beautiful, but pretty, yes. Kathy, the girl behind her, was taller, stockier, less pretty. She kind of looked like a ferret, but that wasn't so bad. The girl I would go on to take to senior prom looked like a horse, and the girl I'd moon over at homecoming was the spitting image of a rat terrier. I've always had a soft spot for animals.
"Hi, hi,"
the girls cooed. It was an exotic sound. And to be honest, Kathy had to be at least as disappointed as I was. They came in and we made our introductions. They asked me where I was from and if it was cold there and how many mothers I had. Typical stuff. And I asked if they ever went to the ocean and if Stuart was as much of a troublemaker in school as he was in the summer. I found out that everybody in the world called him Stu now, except for me, something I'd never really considered. We shared an old joke, and the girls laughed politely. It wasn't going horribly, but I could already feel my palms starting to sweat, and mentally cursed myself for my ever-present nervousness around girls.
"Well," Stuart said, pointing to the blinking 12 on the VCR, "it's about time for my folks to be home, so we ought to get out of here soon."
"Oh, okay,"
Brandy said, and stood from the couch.
"Wait, what's wrong with your parents?" Kathy asked.
"What is it, Walt?"
Stuart asked me, setting me up for a spike.
"Well, besides the devil-worshipping thing, nothing."
"Well, and the cannibalism," Stuart said kindly.
"Stop it," Brandy said. "They're your mom and dad."
"I keep forgetting that," said Stuart.
Kathy got up too.
"You didn't say what it was we were doing tonight,"
she mentioned to my cousin.
"I didn't," he said innocently.
Funny, he hadn't mentioned that to me either.
"What do you want to do, Walt?"
Stuart asked me, and when Brandy and Kathy looked at me, he made a making-out gesture, complete with writhing tongue.
I
stammered, knowing Kathy was from California, where no boy was inexperienced, where no guy was shy, where no one was a loser.
He just doesn't know what to do when there's not 3 feet of snow on the ground, Stuart explained,
making the pressure to save face even worse. Thanks, Stu.
Oh, I love the snow, said Kathy.
Wow. Maybe I would actually get some, just like Stuart said. This would be the greatest day of my life. Heck, the greatest day the world had known since Moses came down from Mount Sinai and caught his family humping a golden cow.
Well, I said,
the workers in my brain frantically pushing buttons and cranking long neglected gears.
We could go somewhere and make out,
is what I wanted to say, but managed to stifle.
Tell ghost stories?
It just popped out.
What?
The redhead said. Stuart grinned.
That idea kicks ass!
I grinned too. It did kick ass. Those brain workers had pulled it off. But my cousin was not through complimenting me.
Walter knows a million and one fucked up stories about death and shit. He's a good storyteller, Brand.
Then, as if this were a dirty family secret,
he wants to be Stephen King when he grows up.
Oh, I hate that guy, Brandy groaned. He did Children of the Corn, right?
I began to explain.
Well, he wrote the...
Stuart interrupted.
I know the best place to tell them, too.
I wanted to know where, but he wasn't saying. The two of us left the living room to get supplies, which turned out to be a blanket and some flashlights.
Kathy really likes you, Stuart told me,
digging a flashlight out from under his bed and handing it to me. It had a cobweb on it. I knew that Stuart's stash of adult literature under the bed did not, however.
Really?
I asked, excitement building up in me once again. Do you remember that kind of naive teenage excitement, old people? Do you remember excitement at all? Stuart looked at me square.
Couldn't you tell?
No.
I looked toward the window, noticing the sun on the horizon, unhampered by mountains like back home. I suddenly got really nervous, the workers in my stomach going to work on their buttons and levers. It wasn't 100% unpleasant, but it was pretty close.
Does she really like me, Stu?
Would I say it if it weren't true?
He responded, silencing me. It didn't occur to me, for a few minutes, that that wasn't an answer. He gave me another flashlight, one of those little black pocket things, and we headed out of the room. We got out of the house before our parents and siblings had made it home. Stuart had assured me that they'd be late, and he was right, as usual. The four of us walked down Stuart Street and down the next block. That's right, we walked. Remember, old folks, the days before cars? That's what people did.
Girls, Stuart cautioned, if you two realize where we're going, don't say anything. Let's keep it a surprise.
Can we guess?
His girlfriend asked. He told her we'd know as soon as we saw it. I didn't know Juniper well enough to know anything, but I was having fun. Just like in the movies, Stuart and his girl walked together, and Kathy walked right by my side. I didn't know if I was supposed to put my arm around her or hold her hand or put my palm in her back pocket. I had seen that done too. So I just kept my arms to myself. As the sun bid the day farewell, the four of us made small talk, also something I wasn't totally familiar with.
So you're really going to be a writer, Walter?
Kathy asked. And again, I got that funny tug in the pit of my stomach.
I hope so. What kind?
I shrugged.
Probably the lazy, unemployed kind, I said prophetically.
Dirty books, mostly, Stu said,
as if I had discussed this with him on many occasions.
A couple of years ago, he wrote this story where this guy gets zapped by a laser in the groin, right? But the laser has some kind of radioactive ray. So when the guy wakes up...
I didn't write that, Stuart, I growled, my face so red it'd probably glow in the dark.
I just told you about it.
No, you didn't, he began.
I just told him about it,
I said to the girls. I thought up a lie, and I thought it up quick.
It was in the Weekly World News.
Kathy nodded, and the redhead gave no reaction. We reached the main road. When we turned right, Kathy made a humming sound.
Don't say anything,
Stuart told her. He whispered something to his girlfriend. Brandy had decided the giggling hour had arrived, and it was getting annoying. Kathy started to walk a bit faster. I walked faster to keep up. She looked at me, then at the road ahead.
Do you like to run?
I hated running. In school, it was always the worst torture when we had to run in gym class, where it became a near-death experience for me and I was lapped by the fat kids. I'd pray for a brain aneurysm, gasping, wheezing, and tasting blood in my constricted throat. One time, I'd had my mom write my gym teacher a note that I had recently been in the hospital so I could get out of running. No lie. In fact, there's nothing coming to mind that I hated more.
Sure,
I said. So we ran. Weirdly enough, it was kinda exhilarating, running at night, with a girl. We hit another crossroads and stopped under a streetlight, looking behind us. Stuart and Brandy just kept walking. We talked about them until they approached. At one point, I asked if Stuart was considered cool in high school.
He's considered funny, she said. Maybe not cool, but funny.
That struck me as sad. To me, he was Fonzie cool.
But who cares about people in high school?
She said, right before the others were in hearing range.
They're not so smart.
She was right. I wasn't even 15 yet, still in junior high, but I had noticed how clicky and brain-dead most kids my age and up were. I was thinking things along these lines when Brandy's giggle interrupted them. The four of us walked together another couple of blocks. Now we were in the hills, fairly far away from other houses. It wasn't completely dark yet, but it would be soon. Stuart assured his girl that it wasn't much farther, and I started to notice the crickets chirruping and a couple of industrious fireflies floating around. When we cleared the next ridge, I almost swore. Stuart was right. I knew as soon as I saw it.
Holy shit, Brandy muttered, saving me the trouble. That's your makeout spot?
Makeout spot?
That's where we're telling our stories, yes,
Stuart said, obviously irritated at her choice of words.
The cemetery?
I got out, thoroughly befuddled. At the bottom of the ridge, Juniper's cemetery sat, taking up quite an expanse, surrounded by a tall fence. There was an old pickup truck parked in front of the cast iron gate, which stood open. Stuart was proud of himself.
Yes, sir. Here lies the body of Mary Lee, died at the age of 103.
I didn't finish the rhyme, though it was obviously aimed at me.
What are we going to do in there?
We're going to have ourselves a little weenie roast, Stuart proclaimed. And you're the little weenie.
You are,
I retorted brilliantly. We made our way to the gate, mindful of the caretaker, who owned the pickup, and slipped quietly inside. There were a couple of large buildings inside the cemetery, which I assumed to be for maintenance, though Stuart said they were crypts and one was for cremation, and we snuck past them, heading out into the main part of the cemetery, where there were rows of headstones and trees as far as I could see. Just minutes after we got there, I heard the sound of a car door being slammed, then a motor turning over. We hunkered down and saw the dark shape of the pickup truck heading up the ridge we had just come from. Stuart said the cemetery was open till sundown, but caretaker Herring had been working a little late today. We were freer to look around now, though we all found it necessary to talk softly.
That's a relief, Kathy whispered, watching the taillights fading in the distance.
He's crazy, you know, Stuart confided to me. Talks to himself. Catches squirrels in here and eats them. And they say he does stuff to the corpses.
What kind of stuff? Brandy asked.
Walter knows what kind of stuff.
She looked at me. I just shrugged.
Come on. Old man Herring's just lonely, Kathy said. He's not crazy.
By defending the weird and unpopular, she had just gotten more attractive in my eyes.
Could we get in trouble for being in here?
I asked. It's hard to explain, but since it wasn't just me and my cousin stirring it up, the risk felt greater. Still, I absolutely hated the idea of looking like a coward in front of a couple of girls.
Duh. People aren't allowed in at night, Brandy told me. Didn't you see the no soliciting sign outside?
I turned to gauge Stuart's expression, but he was perusing the headstones up ahead. We all wandered through, taking our own little tour of Juniper's permanent rest stop. A couple of the markers were huge and ornate. One even had a life-size statue of a woman or angel on top of it. It was all fascinating to a scare-seeker like myself, but morbid.
"Check this out, Walt," Stuart said,
gesturing over yonder. He flicked on his flashlight and illuminated a black patch a few yards away. Upon closer inspection, there was a reason it was so dark. It was a hole in the ground. A large one. Not a hole, but a grave. An empty grave.
Wow,
I said, constantly in awe of the new things my cousin showed me. It was deep, though I wouldn't say 6 whole feet. The dirt on the sides was even and dry, which made me think a machine had dug it. At the bottom of the hole was dirt, and maybe a rock or two.
"Who's going to get in it?" Stuart asked the group.
"What are you talking about?"
Brandy whined, echoing my sentiments exactly.
"I mean, who has the cojones to climb in an open grave?"
We all looked at each other. Stuart pointed the flashlight at each one of us in turn, like an accuser.
"I'll pass, thank you," said Kathy flatly. "What are cojones?" asked Brandy.
"Don't look at me," I said, because they all were. I lost mine in a motorcycle accident. The truth is, as cool as all this was, I am pretty easily spooked, and just the sight of an open grave at night made me uneasy. I'm impressed I could come up with something even halfway clever at the time.
"The thing with Walter is this."
Stuart patted me on the back, which reassured me just enough so he could pull the rug out from under my feet.
"He's a pretty sensible guy, but he will do anything if you dare him."
"Really?"
Brandy asked, as if this suddenly made me cooler. "No," I said. "Why get in an open grave? What would that accomplish? I didn't have to prove myself to these girls."
"Anything," Stuart repeated. "And I'll bet, if we dared him to, he'd dive right into that thing."
"No, I wouldn't," I said.
"Hell, I'll bet this isn't even the first time you've been in a freshly dug grave."
Of course it was. It was the first time I'd been in a cemetery at night. And we were getting mighty close to the first time I'd ever been truly angry with my cousin. And that's when Brandy said,
"I dare you to jump into that grave."
I moaned. I looked at Kathy. She seemed pretty smart, pretty sensible. I thought she'd bail me out. She shined the little black penlight at me.
"Well, you've been dared."
I moaned again. This was stupid. It was sick. And stupid.
"What are you going to do?"
Stuart asked. He sounded genuinely curious. Not like my enemy at all. I felt like telling him that if he was so brave, he should jump in first. But another part of me wanted to be the brave one. Wanted to look good in front of the girls. I wanted to be the sort of guy who would do anything for a dare.
"This is stupid and sick," I said.
"Walter," Kathy said, taking a step toward me,
"I dare you to jump in too."
Oh, great. Now I had to do it. It's funny how, when you're young, what other people think seems so much more important than what you think. I guess that's not so funny after all. It wasn't that much of a jump, really. Just off the grass, dropping a bit, then whap, my shoes touched down. I had done it, and it was done, and it didn't even hurt. But something was wrong. I knew that as soon as I heard the whap. Sure, there was dirt at the bottom of the grave, but only a bit of it, less than 1/2 inch. Under that was wood.
"Wood,"
I whispered. The whole bottom of the grave was wood. What was made of wood? I was suddenly afraid.
"What'd you say?"
Stuart asked from above.
"Oh my God," I murmured. "I'm standing on wood."
Stuart and Brandy started laughing. I didn't get what was funny.
I'm standing on a coffin!
And then, the grave seemed very deep and very enclosed. I couldn't just jump out like I had jumped in. The top of the grave was over my head. I was standing in a grave. I was standing in a grave on a coffin. I was standing in a grave on a coffin, and under the coffin was a dead person. But how dead? I tried to pull myself up and slipped back down. The familiar whap of the wood beneath my feet came loud to my ears as I landed again. What if it was an old grave, and the wood was rotted? It could buckle beneath my feet. I could fall into the coffin. With the body. Out! Out! Let me out! I squealed, sounding like a baby and not giving a devil's damn about it. Stuart gave his flashlight to his girlfriend and leaned over the grave. Give me your hand, man, he said. He grabbed my wrist and hoisted me up a bit to where I could grab onto the grass. I scrambled out of the hole and wiped my hands on my jeans, embarrassed and freaked out. And angry, too.
You guys knew the grave was here, I accused them, especially my cousin. You planned this just to shit with me.
No, we didn't, said Stuart. I swear.
I looked at him. He looked at me. And I had to believe him.
Shit with you?
Kathy said, and we all laughed. Stuart looked down into the hole, and I thought for a minute he was going to jump down in there too, just to save me a bit more face. Instead, he backed away and shook his head.
I don't see any wood.
It's there, I muttered. Can we just move on, please? We walked away from the grave, and I didn't look back. My imagination has been mean to me in the past, and I wanted to think about something else. Luckily, I have been the butt of jokes or embarrassed myself enough times that I could put it behind me quite quickly. We found a bare area of grass right alongside a cobblestone path and spread out the blanket there. The four of us sat on it in a makeshift circle, the flashlights in the middle.
Hey, let's have an exorcism, suggested Brandy, giggling. An exorcism on who?
Kathy asked.
She means a seance, said Stuart. And no, let's just tell scary stories, like regular people.
He turned to me, and he might have winked. I couldn't really tell in the dark. So here was my chance. Not only was I in the spookiest place on earth, except maybe under Stuart's bed, with a real honest-to-badness girl, but I was going to be center of attention. In the immortal words of Darth Vader, this was going to be a day long remembered.
So that night, the old woman finds the house colder than it usually is. She turns on the thermostat, but it doesn't help. It seems like the doors are ajar or all the windows are open a crack, even though she's sure she closed them.
I was almost to the end of my second story. Our fourth, after I told people can lick too, and Stuart recounted the tale of the sorority girl who bites the nails of the cadaver's hand, and Brandy royally butchered the ghostly hitchhiker, holding the big flashlight up toward my face like a microphone. The mood was fine, and the stories were classics, but something was missing.
She starts getting restless, scared, keeps thinking she hears something, like a scraping sound at the door or upstairs. Finally, she drinks some warm milk and goes up to her room.
I saw a slightly blank look on Brandy's face, so I added,
you know, because warm milk helps you sleep.
I looked at Stuart quickly, furtively. He tossed me an expression that said, mediocre.
And he was right. It was a mediocre story. I knew a dozen of them, and I chose a barely scary for Cub Scouts campfire tale.
Still, I was too late to quit now. I was the center of attention, damn it.
She climbs into bed and pulls the blankets around her, still cold. And just as she's about to drift off, she hears a voice. Donetta. It's very far away, and at first she thinks she just imagined it,
After all, she's had a stressful day of murder and body disposal. Her mind isn't exactly at its sharpest. But a moment later, Donetta. The voice is coming from outside the house, and though she is scared, she thinks she's safe because she knows she locked the door. Donetta, it calls, closer now, and closer, and closer. She sits up on the bed, sheets around her body. Donetta, says the voice, and she gasps because she realizes that it's inside the house now. I paused, because I realized why this story wasn't near as scary as it should have been. I was just too darn nervous about the girl, about the location and the grave, and about the fact that I might be expected to make out with this girl, and that was a pressurized situation that I did not know how to handle. I looked at Brandy. She was holding on to Stuart pretty tightly, but I couldn't be sure if it was my story or just her personality. Judging by her previous actions, it was not the story. I glanced at Kathy, too. She was sitting very close to me, which I took as a good sign, but then I wondered if it was because I was whispering. I'd been telling the story awfully quietly, but you can't blame me. After all, we were trespassing. Kathy gave me a go on signal, and I did, trying my best to draw out the Donettas as long and sibilant as possible. And when I hit the punchline, where the old woman says, "Where are you?" and I shout, "Right here," I lurched forward, causing Brandy to shriek and Kathy to jump back. The girls laughed, and Stuart smiled big, but I knew my story hadn't been what it should have been. When Brandy asked if it had really happened, Kathy ruined it by saying that it was just a children's ghost story she had heard a few times before. Except for in her version, the old woman had taken a bone, and at the end the ghost says, "You've got it!" I felt embarrassed, busted, and betrayed. Stuart seemed to sense this, because he immediately praised me and my story.
"Oh, I love the way you whispered, Donetta, Walt. That was scary."
"So it is a true story, then?"
Brandy wanted to know.
"Right," Stuart chided. "They covered it on 60 Minutes.
"Do you want to hear a story that is true?"
Kathy asked in a quiet, almost timid voice. We did. After all, she was the only one who hadn't told one yet. She cleared her throat and made the standard apologies about how she wasn't a professional storyteller, and though she had a good memory, she might have to make up a couple of the details as she went along, etc. She began, and I gave her a reassuring squeeze on the arm, which, it turned out, she didn't need.
"My grandma is from Mexico, a little village just south of the border near Baja California. When she was a teenager, one of her friends, Dora Alvarez, got really sick. They lived on a ranch a few miles from my grandma, and one day, she got on her brother's horse and rode to Dora's ranch to visit her. There was a country doctor who didn't live in the village, but Dora's father paid him to come from town to treat Dora. He was supposed to be really good, but he couldn't figure out what was wrong with her or how to treat her. She was very weak, and then she would start to improve and then get worse. On the day my grandma visited her friend, she claimed she was feeling a lot better. They made plans for something, a dance or a turning 15 party or something. When my grandmother left that evening, she said Dora was out of bed and waving to her from the doorway. The next morning, though, she had regressed really badly. Dora was dead by afternoon."
Kathy looked us over as she spoke, and at this point, she looked at me. I gave her a nod. She was doing pretty good. A few too many unnecessary details, maybe, but good.
"The day after that, my grandmother and her mother went to the ranch to be with the family. She told me that Dora's dad was really emotional, and he asked her to pick out what she thought was Dora's favorite dress to bury her in. My grandma said she was so peaceful, just like she was sleeping."
"That's true," Brandy chimed in.
When our dog Linus died, he looked just the same as he did when he was napping, except he wasn't. He was dead.
Kathy eyed her friend, maybe just to make sure she was finished.
Right, she said. That's how it was. Well, they held the funeral and buried her quickly, like they did in those days, and all of the family members came together from both sides, and they had a big dinner like Spanish people do at any get-together, a banquet. At some point during the evening, Señor Álvarez, Dora's father, broke away from the banquet. I guess it was all too busy and cheerful for him. He walked a couple of miles to the cemetery and stood before her fresh grave. He apparently said a few words to her, a few more goodbyes, and started to walk away when he thought he heard something. It was a faint sound, very small. He strained to listen, not sure of what it was or where it was coming from. It came again, a banging sound, and a muffled voice. It was his daughter's voice, crying out.
I was center of attention no more.
He ran all the way back to his ranch, hysterical. My grandma heard him half a mile away. They met him at the front gate. He was gasping for air, babbling. She's alive! My daughter's alive! He kept saying. He ran to the shed and grabbed a shovel. He told his brother and the other men who were there to come with him, bringing their own shovels. They got their horses, and then they were gone. My grandmother only argued with her mother for a minute, before she out and out rebelled and took the family cart to follow them. When she got to the cemetery, Dora's father was already digging away. One of the men tried to stop him, asking what he had heard, and trying to get him to be still long enough so that they could all listen. My grandmother got off the cart and approached. One of the cousins stopped her. All were silent. They listened, there in the dark, with only the moon and a solitary lamp one of the cousins had brought with him, breaking up the darkness.
Now Kathy paused, cocking her head as if she, too, was listening. She was a gifted storyteller. Solitary lamp, I marveled, but too enwrapped in the story to interrupt.
For more than a minute they listened. My grandma wanted to get closer to the grave, but the men wouldn't let her. Crickets, frogs, a bird somewhere, the shifting of the horses, but nothing more. Finally, one of the men said, I don't hear anything. Señor Álvarez attacked the dirt with renewed energy, crying, Hurry! And I'm coming, Dora! The other men saw no alternative but to help. Being a fresh grave, it took only minutes to get down to the coffin. Señor Álvarez fell to his chest on the wood and pressed his ear to the coffin.
At that moment, I couldn't help but think of the grave I'd been standing on just an hour before. It was chilling.
Again, no sound from within. Help me bring it up, the girl's father cried, and using their shovels as pry bars, they tipped the coffin enough to drag it up out of the ground. Just one more minute, my child, Señor Álvarez shouted. Señor Álvarez's brother used his shovel to break the seal on the coffin, and they quickly pried it open. All this time, my grandmother had been standing on the outskirts of the plot, where one of the cousins was restraining her. She heard the wood crack and strained to get a look. The young man held her tight. There came a gasp from all at the gravesite, and Señor Álvarez let out a wail like a baby in a cold river. The cousin by my grandma took a step forward to see what they were reacting to, and grandma broke away from him, clamoring to the open coffin and lamp.
Kathy paused again here, and my stomach tightened up so hard it was almost painful. Yes, she was the center of attention, and rightly so. She held off a second or two more, and I noticed that none of us were breathing. At least, it seemed like it to me. A somber expression came across Kathy's face as she looked at us.
Dora Álvarez was dead. but she was not in the same position she had been in when they laid her to rest. She was twisted in the coffin, her legs drawn up. The wooden coffin lid was marred with scratches. Her dress was torn, her nails ragged and bloody. My grandmother only saw it for a second, but she told me she won't ever forget the girl's face, no matter how old she gets. Dora had clawed at her face as she suffocated. She had scratched out her eyes.
Kathy stopped then, and shifted in such a way that told us she was done. Brandy made a mewling, wasn't that icky sound. Stuart chuckled. I made no sound. I couldn't move. The goosebumps were on my arms, my legs, my neck, even my crotch. I felt like I might be sick.
True story,
Kathy said, getting up off the ground. She brushed off her behind.
You'd know it if you knew my grandma.
I needed no such disclaimer. I believed it. I could see that face in my all-too-vivid imagination, staring, agonized, accusing. I closed my eyes, but the face just got sharper, closer in my mind. I opened them again. Stuart cleared his throat, not for attention, but because it really needed to be cleared.
I think I speak for us all, he said, pausing. When I say, holy shit.
Yeah,
Brandy agreed and clapped a couple of times. Those two also got up, but I sat still. While Stuart explained the point of the story to a creeped-out Brandy, I noticed how dark it had gotten in the cemetery. Not pitch black, but light enough so that the trees and headstones made long, hard shadows in every direction. Those shadows were cruel and animated. I've always been more susceptible to horror shows and urban legends and nightmares, and Kathy's story had particularly struck a nerve. I was more than spooked. I was scared. We were in a place of the dead, in the home of the dead, telling tales that might be offensive to them. Unlike the others, my kin weren't buried here. I was trespassing. I glanced at the murky shadows again. What might be there, in the dark, watching me? Maybe creeping up on me. Maybe hungry for my body. Maybe hungry for my soul. And now the workers in my mind were running blind, pushing buttons at random, bumping into each other, having epileptic fits inside me. I shut my eyes again, unable to keep out sick thoughts, corrupt questions. Images bombarded me in the blackness, hissing, grabbing, lurching things, things that had once been alive but were now dead, things that had never been alive but soon would be. They were all milling around the blanket, but I didn't move. I was rooted to the spot, as if I had seen it with my own eyes, which I squeezed closed even more. My suspicions became certainty. Something was shuffling toward me in the darkness. I had disturbed its rest by jumping on its coffin, and now it wanted to get its hands, its claws, on me. Something dead, rotting, staring, stinking, but somehow horribly alive. It was so close I could almost hear it breathing next to me. But it waited. It was just waiting for me to open my eyes, because it relished the look it would see on my face. I don't know where these thoughts came from, but they were there, and I was stone frozen on the ground, afraid to look, afraid to move, afraid to make a sound. I felt a hand grab my arm, and I flailed wildly.
Whoa!
Stuart yelped in surprise, letting me go at once.
Chill out, man! It's just me!
I turned, barely able to look. Nope. No demons or ghosts or zombie Stuarts. Just my cousin, eyeing me weirdly.
I know, I said, chuckling a very fake chuckle. I just thought...
Thought you would have no eyes, was my initial plan, but I changed it to...
Thought you might try and throw me back in that grave.
He looked at me square as if to say, "What kind of feminine hygiene product do you think I am?" Then he put up his arms. "Wouldn't think of it," he said. "Unless I brought a box of Depends." The girls laughed. I pretended to. But I kept thinking about that grave and about Dora Alvarez. What if, in the dark, I stepped into it again, but this time I burst through to join whoever was sleeping there? What if they weren't sleeping? What if the others left me here? I got up off the ground and handed the blanket to my cousin.
"It's time I headed back," Kathy said.
"Not by yourself?" I gasped.
"No, not alone. Hell no. That story always creeps me out."
She came over and gave me a swat on the arm, like a guy would. Though I didn't realize it then, that should have told me I'd be getting no kisses tonight.
"From the looks of you, you really know what I mean."
I wanted to make light of it, but I couldn't. I was too freaked out. I heard a sound to my left, and my eyes darted there, expecting to see... Well, I don't know what I expected to see. It was just Stuart whispering something to Brandy. On second look, he wasn't whispering. Kathy coughed into her fist. They came apart like two magnets.
"Let's go," she said,
and the three of us came after her. It was really dark now. No moon could be seen.
"You want to hold the flashlight?"
she said to me as I followed closely behind.
"Huh? Oh, yeah."
I took it and walked a little faster toward the exit. Somewhere behind us, an owl made an ominous sound.
"Who should I keep?"
it might have been asking.
"Walter, are you okay?"
Kathy asked.
"What?"
I said, stumbling and shining the light on her.
"Nothing."
We reached the place we came in not long after, and I was studying the ground in front of me and didn't look up until my cousin swore.
"Shitsickle," Stuart grunted.
And he was right.
"Old man Herring locked the gate."
It was true. We were locked inside. The four of us, and whatever else might be in here, too.
"Now what do we do?"
Brandy grumbled.
"Spend the night," I knew Stuart would say.
Maybe he did plan this.
"It's just a gate," Stuart said. "We'll climb over. No big deal."
Then, to prove his point, he scampered up the side of the gate, pulling himself up with his hands and feet, quick as a circus performer. Perched at the top, he looked down on us.
"There's no razor wire or anything. Come on up."
Brandy took hold of the gate and started to climb, then stopped to whine. Stuart looked at me.
"Walt, help her up, will you? And watch the hands."
I did as I was told, and something told me that Kathy would be next, leaving me the last one inside. I'd have to wait my turn, alone. I glanced around us, my little penlight barely probing the dark. This was just like the movies, those stupid movies I liked so much. Stuart helped his girlfriend over the side, told me to throw him the blanket, and then they both started down. I looked at Kathy, about to tell her to go ahead, not wanting to, but unable to act against my Midwestern upbringing. She took hold of the metal, about to leave me by myself in there. So this is what they were waiting for. They being whatever beings lived in the graveyard and came out only at night. For me to be the only one left inside the gate. Clever.
"Why don't we go together?"
Kathy said, reassuring me and putting me to shame at the same time. We climbed up the gate. To keep from imagining moldering hands grasping at my feet, I strained for something to say to her.
"Wow, that story was... Are you thinking of becoming a writer?"
I asked, almost adding "to," but unable to.
"No," she said without any thought. "I'm going to be a dental assistant."
It was pretty easy getting up, over and down. When my feet hit non-consecrated ground, I felt instantly relieved. It must have been the place. That dead place. I started walking toward the road, even before Kathy was off the fence, to catch up with the others, but mostly to put a little distance between the cemetery and me. Kathy caught up just as fast.
"Imagine if we'd had to spend the night in the cemetery," Stuart said,
though his tone suggested maybe it wouldn't be so horrible. So it had crossed his mind.
"And that would have sucked,"
Brandy moaned, and I couldn't think of a more appropriate word.
"Nobody knew we were there either,"
Kathy added, something even I hadn't considered. I was glad I hadn't while inside. Stuart whistled.
"Well, next time we'll bring sleeping bags, just in case."
Everybody laughed a little bit, and I managed to calm myself down a notch. But I think the damage had been done. I looked at Kathy and noticed she was walking awfully close to Brandy, as far away from me and the group as possible. We all walked in silence for a while. Then Stuart started imitating one of the worst teachers they'd all shared, and the mood lightened. When we reached the main road, the girls went off in one direction, and we headed in the other. Stuart asked if they wanted us to walk them home, to protect them from ghosts and flashers and such, but they politely declined. Brandy said,
"It was nice to meet you, Walt."
And Kathy said, "Yeah." And then they were off. Stuart and I walked back to the house, keeping mostly quiet. I think he was as uncomfortable as I was. I wondered if he was ashamed to know me being a coward and not a good storyteller and all. But about a block away from his house, he started to sing the classic Monty Python song, "Sit on My Face." And when I joined in, I knew everything was back to normal. And it was. The rest of the visit was fun and pretty much uneventful. When it was time to go home, we promised to keep writing and coming up with new ways to stir things up. Our younger siblings vowed that the next trip, they would have their revenge. It would be a long time before I experienced my first kiss. Before that happened, I would meet new people, make a fool of myself at least 10 more times, try some new things, fail at most of them, and learn a thing or two. And when that kiss finally did come, it involved a whole different set of circumstances. And come to think of it, it was pretty scary too. The end. From Mike Herring, the world's greatest campfire storyteller.
Well, there you have it. And two things. There's a line about the cats and the fireworks, and I thought, oh, you know, if any of you know, the people that love cats like Abby Hilton hear that, they're going to be like, oh, there's more cat hate. Oh, that's great. And the thing is, I tried not to change anything from when I wrote it 15 years ago. I did end up changing a couple of words here and there, but it was just because reading it aloud, there were a couple of things that made me stumble or a couple of lines that I was like, ew. And you know, whose sprinklers come on at 1:30 in the morning? So that was the first thing. I apologize for that. I didn't cut it out because I didn't want to make any changes. I wanted this to be an artifact, you know, to be what it was in 2000. And it's not. And that's partly because, I don't know, I'd say 2003, 2004, I actually did a recording of this. So I read it aloud. I did the thing before I realized that that was my number one rule for writing. I read it aloud and I did a recording. In fact, if you want to hear it, well, you can't. But if you want to hear 10 seconds of it, here you go.
Still, it was too late to quit now. I was the center of attention, damn it. She climbs into bed and pulls the blankets around her, still cold. And just as she's about to drift off, she hears a voice. Donetta. It's very far away, and at first she thinks she just imagined it. After all, she's had a stressful day of murder and body disposal, Her mind isn't exactly at its sharpest. But a moment later, Donetta. The voice is coming from outside the house, and though she is scared, she thinks she's safe because she knows she locked the door. Donetta, it calls, closer now, and closer, and closer.
And I don't know if my voice has changed in, you know, the dozen years since I recorded that. I know that my recording environment has changed, and certainly the sound quality has changed. And I'd like to think that my performing, my talent as a performer has changed, has gotten better. But, shoo, I never say this. You know me. I never say this. But I love this story. There was a moment where I just stopped and I laughed, and then I had to reline, and I couldn't do it, and I had to laugh again. I love this story, and I don't say that lightly. As you know, I always have to dismiss whatever I've written and shared with you guys because I don't want to come off as arrogant. I have an uncle, he was raised Mennonite, and we had a conversation really recently, and he was saying that the thing above all in the Mennonite religion is humility, is to be humble. And he remembered this scripture from 50 years ago, from 60 years ago, who knows how long ago it was, where it was about, you know, that God doesn't like somebody who is arrogant and puffed up and et cetera, et cetera. What he wants is people to be meek and lowly and realize their place in the universe is, you know, not great. Anyway, he was talking about that, of how just it's not right to be proud and to have your nose in the air and to think that you're better than others and to think that you're handsome or funny or smart or anything like that. You don't wear fancy clothes that will impress the neighbors or anything like that. You don't want to impress the neighbors. You want to keep your face down low. And when he was saying that, I was just like, wow, dude, maybe I was born a Mennonite. And I didn't realize that because I have nothing but disdain for people that think that their crap doesn't smell and that think that they're so great at everything. And yet here I am reading a story to you that I wrote in my own voice and doing a podcast explaining my motivations in my own voice. Like I said before, there's got to be some kind of arrogance there, huh? But I like this story a lot. It's funny. I do it less now, but when it used to be that I would finish so few stories that when I did finish one, it was a celebration. And I would create a whole document explaining where the story came from and explaining my thoughts on the story. And so I read that right before starting to record this, again, from the year 2000. I was surprised. I had no memory of where this story came from. Sorry, I had no memory of why I wrote this story, what spurred it on. But to make a long story behind the story shorter, my friend Jeff wrote a story about his first kiss. And he, instead of the character being Jeff, the character was Sam Bowden. That was the name of the character that he made up. And he wrote a story about his youth and about his first kiss. And because it was Sam Bowden instead of his real name, he could elaborate on certain things. He could fabricate other things. And he also had the advantage of time. You know, that it had been 10 years since his first kiss, or gosh, I don't know how long. He was able to look back at it, you know, through that prism of now I'm a grown man. And I just loved that idea. I was like, wow, that is so cool. I'm going to do that too. And I wrote a story called Space Shit. Very briefly, there was a time that what seemed like dung appeared all across our high school parking lot. It had fallen from the sky. And we couldn't explain it. I mean, now if I had to explain it, I'd be like, well, our rival school, Miller's Fork, probably got just tons of dung, of cow pies or whatever, and threw them all over the cars and the parking lot just to be a-holes. But at the time, it's just like, this fell from the sky. This is, oh my gosh, this is space shit. And so I wrote a story about that, only it really came from space. And I combined it with a time that my friends and I were coming out of a high school basketball game, and there was a UFO in the sky, and some of us saw it and some of us didn't. And it was a very autobiographical story about my first kiss and about, you know, evil excrement that came from space. And it was a long story. I just kept putting more and more detail of my childhood and my youth in it. And I had more fun writing that story than any story I've ever written before or since. It was just a pleasure through and through. Good Lord, it was fun. And I sent that to Jeff, and he's like, wow, this is great. I challenge you to write another Sam Bowden story and have it for me by X day. And let's just say that it was Halloween night, since this is the Halloween episode of the podcast. And so I did. I wrote another story about Walter, and I can't remember what Walter's last name is, but it was the same guy that this story was about, and the spaceship was about. Then you have that last line where it's like, you know, I was a long time before my first kiss, and that turned out to be pretty scary too, which is, you know, there's a sequel to this story kind of thing. Or not, or maybe it's just supposed to be fun ending. But anyway, all of that I had completely forgotten, except for I vaguely knew that this was the same kid from, and yeah, how do you censor a title like Space Shit? I don't know. Big keeps saying that we need to do Space Shit on the podcast, that he thinks that would go over really well and people would laugh and it really enjoy it, and it has a huge cast of characters. And so there could be a lot of voices, and I think he just wants to do the Foley of, you know, and here it comes from the sky. Anyhow, I keep saying, oh gosh, I can't, I don't want to, or I do want to, but I shouldn't. And I don't know, maybe we will bug him about it to bug me about it, because I think if he really wanted to, he could convince me to do it. Anyhow, the story behind this story, this actually combined, I want to say, five different things that actually happened to me. The first is that every year, every summer, we would go visit my cousin in California. And I just loved my cousin, and I would get into trouble with him. You know, he was so much more sophisticated than me, and he knew everything, and he was from California, and in California, people are just better, right? It just, he lived in a, well, he didn't even live in a city. I'll bet his hometown was 25,000 people or something like that. I don't know how big that is. But I lived in a village. I lived in a farming community of less than 1,000 people where there was nothing. And there was, you know, no one. So his world just seemed so romantic. We would get together and we would just make trouble, and that's why I laughed while I was recording the story, is it had incidents. It had things that we did. We would play pranks on everybody else there, and we would use the family's video camera to document it. And I missed that. I was just like, wow, holy cow, that's rad. Anyway, that was one part of the story that was based on. Another is that I did go in a cemetery with, you know, two guys and two girls, but not with my cousin. We didn't sneak into the cemetery. We went into the cemetery, and there was an open grave. And see, I am so tainted by what happened to Walt in this story that I don't know if I was dared to jump in the grave or not, or if I just did it to be an idiot. But I did, and it wasn't dirt that I landed on, but wood. And I realized I had jumped onto a
coffin. And that freaked me out. So that was the second element. I did have that happen. There was a girl that I was really into that liked to run. And so I tried to run so that we had something in common. That's, I guess, a third thing. It's not, I mean, it's just a tiny detail. There's two more, though. The fourth is that we did tell ghost stories. The same two guys and two girls. I don't think it was the same day that we went to the cemetery. And one of them told this story about the woman who is buried alive, the girl who is buried alive. And it upset me. It freaked me out. It was a really scary story. And, you know, I had had dreams as a kid of being buried alive. I remember seeing The Pit and the Pendulum, the Roger Corman version. And at the end, they've left a woman entombed down there. I mean, and it just, oh, it struck me the horribleness of that, of being locked down there forever. And just, you're going to starve to death, or you're going to, yeah, oh gosh. And so that freaked me out, that story that she told about that. I mean, Dora Alvarez is a different reference altogether. And Old Man Herring, oh, I think there was a dedication at the end. Our Boy Scout leader, this man that I loved, his name was Herring, and he, one time we told ghost stories around a campfire on a campout, and people got freaked out, and so he was told, you know, you can't do that anymore. But I really idolized that guy. I thought he was really cool, and I haven't seen him in so long. But, gosh, I don't even know if he's still alive. I hope so. He was a good man. I wish I could be as good a man as he was. But I hate kids, so, you know, that's never going to happen with me. And the last thing, and this is, you know, poor Walter. Walter, I guess, you know, he wants to score with this girl, and maybe I should have made her just beautiful, right? So that he's just, oh gosh, the chance I'm going to have, oh, how great that is. And I don't know why. It's been too long to know why I didn't have her just be super hot. And maybe it was because if she was super hot, he would have just freaked out. It's like, what chance do I possibly have? Holy cow, look at this girl. Kind of thing. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I think if I had to do it over again, though, she'd just be beautiful. But think he's cool and funny. And it's like, wow, he's going to score. And he doesn't because of his freak out. And yeah, I am sorry to say that the freak out happened to me. We had all gone for a drive, and we went to this, we went up the canyon, and we stopped the car, and people started telling ghost stories in the car. And I became really, really freaked out. And I was afraid that when I opened my eyes, there would be someone looking inside the car, someone who was just waiting for me to open my eyes. And it was stupid. I know that now. I knew that then. But I was really freaked out. I wish there was a better word. But you know what I mean? It's like when you take a drug and you have a bad trip, right? You know, it's a freak out. You know, he dropped some acid and he had a freak out. That's what it was like. And I was so ashamed, but at the same time, it's just like, that's what happened to me. So I incorporated that into the story of my dang freak out. And here's the thing. As a writer, you can take terrible things that have happened to you or terrible things that you have done, and you can write them down and attribute them to other people or to fictional people. And you take a step away, and suddenly it doesn't hurt as bad, or suddenly it's not as embarrassing, or it's not as shameful. You've taken a step away. It's cathartic, is what it is. And yeah, I feel bad for Walter, because Walter is me, but at the same time, he's not me. He is a little bit humiliated. And here's the thing, my friends stayed my friends. Maybe they couldn't respect me anymore. I don't know. I was vulnerable and I was immature and inexperienced. And I'm still all of those things. And anyway, though, I think those were the five elements of reality in the story. And I don't know, maybe there were more, but I don't think so. We never threw firecrackers at kittens, okay? It was just an element of to show that he was mischievous or that he was mean. So I don't know, that he liked getting into trouble. And yeah, while I was reading the story, I was like, why do I call this the graveyard story, the cemetery story, the cemetery tale, the great... See, and now I'm confusing the title with Neil Gaiman's book, because the story should have been called Stirring It Up, right? Because he mentioned Stirring It Up two or three times. And this was one of those where I had a real struggle coming up with a title. And in the notes, there were three or four titles. Although Stirring It Up was none of them. And yeah, ultimately I just came up with The Cemetery Tale because there is a story within the story in a cemetery about a cemetery that is told, you know, in the cemetery. I guess I was trying to be clever. I don't know. But that's what the story's been called for 15 years, and that's what it's called. I've only got a minute or two before the battery is going to die. Not the battery. Before the hard drive is full. But this is my Halloween episode. I love Halloween. I love telling ghost stories. I love everything about it. Like Walter, like the dumb kid in the story, who is me, I love scary things. I love being scared. I loved those movies. I remember my cousin and I getting together and we watched some, well, we watched Sleepaway Camp, but there were a couple, there were two or three that we rented that were all, there was one called Summer Camp Nightmare or something that was just terrible, that somehow he had gotten his mother or my mother or something to rent for us. And it was terrible, but we shared it. We saw it together. We were able to talk about how bad it was, and that made it good. You know what I mean? I miss that sort of thing. I miss being able to get together and tell scary stories with people. You know, my uncle, I talk about him every year when we do our That Gets My Goat Halloween specials. And I can tell he really enjoys telling ghost stories. You know, he tells all these things that have really happened to him. But did they really happen? You know, I don't think he's lying. Maybe he's just such a good storyteller that he can make nothing like a phone ringing in the middle of the night seem like this ominous supernatural thing. It's weird. I've been outside for a half hour, right? And my eyes are so accustomed to being out here that it's no longer dark. I can see the lawn. I can see the wall. I can see the tree really, really well. Whereas when I first came out here, I couldn't even see the chair. I was like, oh, shoot, I'm going to be in blackness. And I'm going to be afraid of somebody sneaking up behind me. But that never happened, mostly because I couldn't shut up long enough to get scared. It's harder as a grown-up to get scared by stuff like that, you know, the supernatural or a scary story that somebody tells. I used to be just terrified of having nightmares, of knowing that I was going to probably have a nightmare when I closed my eyes, and it's no fun. But, you know, you learn that a nightmare can't hurt you. And yes, it's terrifying, but then it's over, and it's more important to go to sleep and just hope you know, the nightmare doesn't recur. There's a lot of stuff in adulthood that's changed. And one of the reasons I really liked this story today was that he talks about old people a couple of times. Okay, old people, you remember walking? And I thought, you know, I'm 15 years older than when I wrote this. I am now one of those old people that he's talking to. And that just blew me away. It made me smile. It made me think. It made me love the story. You know, maybe it's not great, but we'll leave it at that. The time has run out. I thank you for joining me with another podcast that dares not speak its name. I hope you liked the story.
Well, I ran out of space just as I told you I would. And I was so close to the end. Basically, I was saying I hope you enjoyed the tale. I hope that you enjoy the Halloween season I hope you enjoy my podcast, but I don't know. Find something that you enjoy. Dedicate enough time to it so that you don't regret not doing it. I've spent a lot of time the last few weeks, days, with my podcast and doing audio versions of my stories. And that's good. I don't know. I could do more. I know that. I could write more. I could record more audio stuff. I could have more episodes of the show for you. And I will. You enjoy your night, your Halloween, your life. Good night.
The music in today's episode was presented by Kevin MacLeod of the website Incompetech.com. Now, MacLeod, let's see what kind of swordsman you've become.
The podcast that dares not speak its name
just happens to be produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. I don't really know what that means, and I'm betting that you don't either. Have a nice night. Thank you.